Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 9 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find us online, on demand, to listen to anytime you'd like. At our website, the address is willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Greg Johnson, I'd like to start with you today. This morning, on this Thursday, the 9th day of March, the United States Department of Agriculture and Brazil's official agency called CONAB both released a set of numbers related to the supply side. Both thought that the size of the soybean crop in Brazil might be about 108 million metric tons. This is a very large crop. In fact, if you convert that to billion bushels, it is 3.968. So this is a large crop. Did you expect both of these agencies to come out with such a large crop and one that's 4 million metric tons bigger than USDA had said it was last month?
Yeah, sometimes USDA is a little conservative. They'll ratchet it up a couple million tons this month and then another million and eventually get to that 4 million like the private analysts have been. But I can't say we were surprised. The private analysts have been talking about a big bean crop. I guess we could talk about the magnitude. 4 million metric ton increase is the largest monthly increase in the Brazilian crop that we've ever had since we've been keeping records. So it was a big number, adds right to the bottom line in world carryout stocks. Harvest is about half done, so it's almost to the point where, you know, that's a good number. I mean, it's not going to get worse unless we really have a lot of rain or something like that. So it's pretty much in the books. And, you know, the private guys have been talking about it for quite some time, but now the government, both governments officially acknowledge that. And we saw the result today.
And the consequence, Ellen Dearden, was that on the U.S. side, they raised the ending stocks 15 million bushel from 420 million to 435 million. How did the trade take all of this in Chicago?
Well, the trade just kind of sold right into the beans nearly all day long. I thought it was interesting in the last half hour's trade. Corn made new lows, but beans held and closed about a nickel off day's lows here on Thursday. Also, I thought it was interesting that the November beans and the March beans, both of which broke under $10, came back and closed above $10 for the day. So I thought the market found some stability, but that primarily looked to have come on the meal side of things. And keep in mind that USDA doled out a pretty big meal number on the export bookings report that came out Thursday morning. So I didn't think the beans acted as poorly as I was afraid they were going to be about quarter till one.
However, you were concerned about the corn and its failing at the end of the day, too. And I don't know whether a 5-cent move is not that big of a move.
No, corn just kept chipping away at the downside all during the session. And really, you're sitting right at a support level on old crop corn with May corn at 367. But these corn broke below just an uptrend line that I've been watching that crossed for this week at 390.
There were a couple of items, Pete Manhart, that I made note of out of the supply and demand table for the soybeans that I'd like you to consider, but maybe turn your attention to the new crop as opposed to the old crop, which are these where these numbers will come from. In order to get to 435 million bushels, they lowered the export number by 25 million, and then consequently they took the average farm price up just a bit. And I think that's probably because mostly a good deal of soybeans have moved, but this is a month over month. So last month we were 910 to 990. This month we raised the bottom end by 20 cents. So now we're 930 to 990. So another dime higher on the midpoint. That's probably for the old crop not so consequential, I would think, for producers.
I think it's on the new crop. Basically, the old crop, I think, is pretty much gone from a lot of producers. But I think that 25 million less exports is just directly from the South American crop being so much bigger. So we raised carryout by actually not raising any bean yields, but by lowering our exports because South American crop was so huge. And we did raise crush, so it wasn't the full 25 that they raised it. They just raised it 15. But that's the carry out there. And I think the interesting that they raised that bottom end from 910 to 930. I don't know where they get those from, but they did raise it.
They do have an Excel spreadsheet, I remember, that they use to track what they have from the monthly sales. And Greg, you can help me out on this, that they get from the grain elevator system across the United States, and then they know, roughly speaking, how much is sold in each month. So the closer we get to the end of the marketing year, the better that number actually gets, I believe. Is that correct, Greg?
That is correct. And as Pete said, as far as old crop beans are concerned, probably 90%, 85-90% of the beans have moved. And, you know, thank goodness, I guess. You know, we've been talking about getting beans sold above $10, and I think the farmers have, you know, realized that with a big South American crop and maybe 3-4 million more acres of beans here in the U.S. this spring, that, you know, the opportunities to sell $10 beans for both old and new crop were going to be somewhat limited, short of a weather problem. And South America didn't have the weather problem this year, so now we're going to have to wait and see whether we have a weather problem or not. But we've got 4 or 5 months between now and then, and in the meantime, we're going to have to face, you know, the USDA's planning intentions report, watch the outside markets, see what the funds, if they want to continue to maintain their long position in both corn and beans. From a fundamental, strictly fundamental point of view, this report just reinforced the fact that we could have a big, big surplus of beans by next fall.
It's possible to have a very large surplus of soybeans. However, Ellen, I want to come back to you because you did see something at the end of the day that gave you at least a little bit of hope, I suppose, that the bean market might have some strength left in it somewhere, at least not to lose so much ground. Is that right?
I would call it stability, maybe not a big upside move, but some stability. And I think, you know, we've pounded these beans pretty darn hard this week, so it's going to be difficult to keep doing that as we get into a little bit more uncertainty. I would think that we might see this basis improve and an opportunity to lock in some basis, both for old and new crop. Greg, you made the comment that you thought that 80 to 90% of the beans are moved. But as you go further west in Iowa, I would venture to say they're more like 40 to 50% sold.
On old crop beans?
Yes, old crop beans.
Wow. What are they waiting for?
Oh, they're waiting for basis improvement. And when you're looking at basis that's 90 under or a dollar under, they just can't let them go. And transportation had been an issue. A lot of beans were heading west, and all winter long rail service going west with beans wasn't available. So that kind of put them under the eight ball, it was difficult for them to let anything go. Now that they're into mud season, they're not moving many beans off farm either.
How do you see this playing out over the next month and a half? And I don't know whether we have that long before they'd really start to roll in the fields.
That area that I'm talking about won't be in the field until very late in April or into the middle of May. My guess is there'll be some guys that will move those beans, but there was talk when I was out in that neck of the woods last week that they would put beans under loan just as a way to generate some cash without having to lose ownership of bushels.
I agree. The basis levels are a lot wider. If you look at historical basis levels for beans for this time of year, they're probably 15 cents cheaper than what they normally are. And I can understand why farmers looking at those basis histories charts might say, let's hold on to them and wait for the basis to get better. A lot of farmers are doing that here as well on that last little bit. The problem is if we lose our export market to South America, which it kind of feels like we will from April on forward, then the only people left that wants U.S. beans will be the processors, and they don't have to compete against the export business. And they know that. They see the same numbers that we do. And so that's why they think they'll be able to buy those beans at a cheaper basis level. And maybe that basis won't improve. I don't know. It's kind of a game of who blinks first. But, right now the processors feel like they have the upper hand. We'll see if that plays out that way or not.
I also am not seeing much interest on the Illinois River at current time for beans, which says to me that the Gulf book for beans for April may not be as strong as what people even thought for the month of April.
So, Ellen, what does all this mean? I'm not capable myself of following through on everything here. So can you?
We've got a wider than normal basis on old crop beans, and it's probably not going to improve. We're running out of time, and places that had logistics problems are just going to have to bite the bullet and accept this basis or wait for basis to get wider with a larger new crop offerings in the fall. No reason to hold it, but nobody wants to do it.
This is old crop and would be for across the nation, but those that are in a far more secluded area out west would be the ones in the biggest trouble. How big a space are we talking about?
I think as soon as you get to Des Moines and west, you're into that whole situation, and it goes into Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas very easily in western part of Minnesota. Big crops and transportation issues came together.
So they're facing a big problem. Will this impact their decision about planting soybeans then?
No, because they've got a whole bunch of corn sitting around too. There's outside piles of corn like you would not believe, as close as Iowa City.
Yeah, space is space. And, if bean basis is wide, people will try to do corn, but then that widens the corn basis out too. So, It chances are up there, if the basis is 90 under for beans, it's probably not real attractive for corn either. So that probably isn't going to influence planting decisions for this year near as much as the February crop insurance average and what their historical yields are. If they can grow 55, 60 bushel beans, but only 170 bushel corn, with the prices where they are, that should favor beans. And I guess that's why everybody's kind of thinking that we will see 3 to 4 million more acres of beans and 2 to 3 million less acres of corn. But again, we won't know that for sure till March 31.
And that'll just be the numbers that producers are telling USDA that they're expecting to put into the ground. You think the Ag Outlook numbers from last week and I think that number was what, 88 million acres for soybeans, Pete Manhart, is a good number?
I don't think it's a bad number. I think you get to here in our part of the world, you're not going to see as much. But as you go to those other places, I think you'll see more where they can't grow corn like we can here. I mean, we've got guys here with 220 bushel numbers on their crop insurance, let alone what they can grow. And as a result, with the expense of corn not quite as high, maybe that'll make them stay. But, we're 20 cents below, not 20, but 15 below last week's high in corn today. So what does that do to that mix? And I think they're going to look at that every day. I think the fringer areas or where they have those kind of problems will encourage more beans, and bankers are telling people, we'll loan you the money for the beans. We aren't going to loan you enough to put all that corn in.
Ellen Dearden, USDA, on its supply and demand figures for corn left the ending stocks number at 2.32 billion bushels, although it swapped out some of the numbers for consumption, raised the ethanol production by 50 million, if I remember correctly, and but it still ended up with the same number. You think those numbers are good?
Oh, they probably are, and I thought it was interesting in the comments somewhere I read that corn feed use was reduced because they expected to see more milo feeding. That'll be interesting to see if that shakes out.
And they did reduce corn feeding number by 50 million. They increased the ethanol production number at 50 million as well. So that's where the swap came in, Greg. Those numbers seem right to you?
Yeah, I don't think I can argue with those. Basically, 2.3 billion carryout. I mean, that's a lot of corn, and we're going to have to get some help somewhere along the line, either from a lower planting number on March 31, some inflation with some funds coming back in to buy, or crude oil market rallying, which hasn't happened here this week, or weather problems, which we probably won't know about for, you know, at least until June. So looking for some positive news, but in the short run, most of the news says we've got plenty and don't expect a big rally here in the next 30 days.
I've got another question. I don't know whether this will really have any impact if there are enough animals, livestock animals, in that Oklahoma, Texas panhandle, Colorado area. The ones in the feedlot, I understand, but the ones on pasture. Did we have enough of an impact this week that that will show up at some point, Ellen, do you suppose?
You mean being fed corn?
Yes.
No, they'll probably try to move those out of that area and take them to Montana or Idaho or someplace where they can rent pasture. They'll try to get them out of there. My understanding is that the number of killed animals is tremendous. And even animals that escaped the flames may have some lung problems. You had a very good interview with Ron Hayes yesterday on your afternoon show, and I think people just don't have a comprehension how large an area this affects.
Actually, the better interview is the one that Ron does with Tom Fanning, who is a cattleman in Oklahoma, and he runs, he manages a feedlot, but he's also on the Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association. So if folks want to look Ron Hayes up, he is on the Radio Oklahoma Network, and you'll want to go find that and listen to that interview too, because you really get a good idea of what kinds of problems they're facing out there, and they really are devastating at this point. Okay, so tell me about these numbers for the corn, Ellen, and if they changed anything for you, or if the soybean numbers that impact them changed anything for you as it relates to new crop corn.
No, I don't think I've got a lot of changes on either one of those. I didn't like the December corn closing down under 390 today. If we have a weekly close under there, that's going to turn me a little bit negative. We certainly broke through an awful lot of moving averages this week on both the corn and the beans, and that's got these funds scrambling out of long positions. I don't know how short they are at this stage of the game. Suppose the commitment of traders report won't be a good reflection of that, since those numbers are as of Tuesday.
Pete Manhart, how did things move through the day for you?
I think people were expecting beans to be worse, actually, and they weren't expecting corn to be as bad as it did at the end, because like Ellen said, it just kept going lower, where beans did recover some. And I think individual people in this area were looking at beans being worse and corn not being as bad. But I think we have to have something somewhere to push it higher. About the only thing we can see right here now is poor weather somewhere, and that could make things really go wild, but we aren't going to know that for, as Greg said, for 30, 40, 50 days.
Greg Johnson, USDA, says that the corn crop in Brazil is a good one. I don't know whether it's a record-sized one, but they increased the size of that corn crop by 5 million metric tons this time around. That's a big increase.
Yes, I think that's close to a record, too, for a monthly increase. The one thing I would say about that is, the bean number, you can have some confidence in that because, like I say, the beans are far enough along. They've harvested almost half of them already. With the corn, they're just now planting a lot of that Safrina double crop corn. So they're assuming that the wet season stays wet and that the corn will pollinate with, you know, but at some point in time, it can turn to the dry part of the season. So the corn, that double crop corn, especially down in South America, that's not in the bin yet. The beans are pretty well, you can pretty well bank on the bean crop, but there's still some weather issues to, you know, or some time at least. I don't know if they'll have weather issues, but there's some time yet before we can put that big South American corn crop in the bin.
Ellen, do we know much more about the corn crop in Brazil?
No, other than the fact that the Safrina corn is the big crop. And so the time frame that's coming up is going to be awfully important. Historically speaking, the hot and dry shows up here in April, but we certainly haven't seen much of the dry side of anything in Brazil.
USDA made note in their commentary, told us that the first crop of corn, they increased on yield, and the second crop on geographic size, right? So they're looking for a double whammy, I guess, and that's why they came out with a 5 million metric ton increase. That'll come into the marketplace in what time frame? I know last year we were in midsummer and suddenly the corn crop that they thought would be exported, I guess, Pete, out of Brazil didn't show up because of bad weather. Can we expect a lot of competition during the summer months?
That's the expectation, is during the summer and on beyond. And I think another thing about the South American crop size was Argentina. We'd heard about how bad they were going to be and how bad it was, and all of a sudden they raised corn production in Argentina and left bean production alone. They did not lower it. So I think that was maybe a shock as much as the big ones in Brazil.
Helen, one of the things we talked about during the day at the beef house on Tuesday, that there was an awful lot of influence, at least I believe that our analysts were mostly in agreement on this, from outside money coming into the marketplace. Can you still expect that to happen in Chicago?
Well, we've seen funds pull the plug on commodities just like they pulled the plug in the crude oil market. But, I mean, crude was down. We've had a close today under $50 a barrel, first time since December 7th. And so the money is flying out of the corn and beans, but notice that it's back into the cattle market again. It's jumped out of the gold and silver and back into the livestock is about the only place right now that funds look like they've got a toehold. And it's not big.
So, Greg, it sounds as if they're not willing to get in the way of a supply-side push in the marketplace for both corn and soybeans and what that might do to prices.
Yeah, I think the funds are the big question. And, of course, they trade off of so many different things. You know, one, they're still looking for a little bit of a Trump bump if we get this billion-dollar infrastructure thing, or if we get the tax cuts that goes right to the bottom line of businesses, and maybe we see the economy pick up. The hirings, the private job hirings, were pretty high this past week. So, you know, I think the funds are looking at some of those outside influences, looking at the price of commodities versus the price of stock market, and looking at saying that that's fairly undervalued as far as commodities are concerned. So they may hang on to those fund those long positions in commodities, even though you can't really make a fundamental case for it today, because, you know, A, inflation could pick up, the economy could pick up, or we could have weather problems. So that might encourage the funds to hold on, even though I can't tell you why they should today.
Ellen Dearden, I think I'll start with you for a final word. Just a reminder that folks who want to see the USDA numbers, You can do that in one of two ways. You can visit the WASDE site directly. That stands for World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. And you can just search Google for WASDE, W-A-S-D-E. It's really pretty simple to find them, and you can find the full supply and demand figures there. Or you can visit our website, willag.org, and hit the USDA reports page, and you'll find some summaries of those numbers. On the world numbers, there is a conversion there to from million metric tons to bushels, so it gives you a better understanding of the size of crops around the world. Okay, Ellen Dearden, your final word for the day.
I'm watching the meal market. We've had an awful lot of time that $330 has been good support on meal. We poked down under that around a 325 area, but look to be finding some very good support in the meal market. I think that equates to finding stability in beans.
Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
I think the weather would be the big thing for anything to boom this year. I think otherwise there's not much out there to keep things from going down very far. I just think that usage is so good that they won't go very far, but otherwise outside of the usage, we need something to turn it around to make it go higher.
And Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
Well, I've been negative beans for a while, and I continue to be negative beans. I'm afraid of that March 31 planting intentions report. But corn, 3 to 4 million less acres of corn, and then you throw some weather problems on top of that, and I think corn might have a chance. So I'm not too negative on corn. We just may have to wait a while. Farmers are already talking about how warm and dry February was, just like it was in 2012, just like it was in three other years where we had below normal trend line yields in corn. So I'm not a weather forecaster, but I think there's enough uncertainty about the weather this year that maybe people will hold on to corn, maybe even put a little weather premium in it at some point in time.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's public radio for the farming world. Our thanks to our panelists today, including Ellen Dearden of Ag Review out of Morton, Illinois, Pete Manhart from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.